I'm going to talk a little bit about what Field to Market is, who we are, and what we're up to, and then get into more depth on what our metrics are and really some of the scientific challenges and opportunities we have when building out those metrics. Field to Market is something of a unique organization. It's been around for about 10 years now. It was originally started about 10 years ago just as a multi-stakeholder initiative with about a dozen of these organizations around a table trying to find a common pre-competitive framework for looking at sustainable agriculture, and particularly in the context of commodity crops in the U.S. And it's grown since then. We now have about 114 members and a small nonprofit organization in D.C. that helps with program development and coordination. The membership is organized and governed by these organizations on the slide. So there are five sectors for governance. We have the growers themselves represented at the table by the grower organizations. We have agribusinesses, food and retail companies selling products to the public, conservation NGOs, as well as a public sector of university and government partners as well. And so the governance and organization of Field to Market is balanced, designed to be balanced across those sectors, so all viewpoints are taken into account as the program is developed. And really, the staff and the organization of Field to Market as a 501c3 have only existed for a few years. All of the work up to that time was done really by these member organizations working together collaboratively. So I think that has some implications for how it's been designed. One of the first questions we always get is, what do you mean by sustainable agriculture, right? We all know there's many different ways you can frame that. Our definition that we work off of is meeting the needs of the present while improving the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And really, we focus, why I looked at this session, I thought this would be a really interesting place, is that we really focus on the first two. Having the farmers at the table means that we never forget this first point, which is increasing productivity is necessary, not only to, you know, for food future demands, but also the first point of sustainability for the farmer is, are they able to produce enough to make ends meet, to make a profit, to continue farming? That's their base definition of sustainability. We take that a step farther and focusing on environmental sustainability. Here in the U.S., looking at environmental outcomes being the main objective. What is continuous improvement? So the goal of our program is to catalyze continuous improvement in these environmental outcomes. So what does that mean? Is looking for improvement over time at the field scale. And this implies that it's a long-term prospect. This is not just a one-off, you measure something and you move on. It's you engage in a longer-term process. You need to put into place the infrastructure and the relationships to manage this long-term process for continuous improvement. And again, I'm going to focus on those first two here today, the definition of what the outcomes are that we've decided on and the tools in particular that we're using to measure those outcomes. The program also includes other elements, including education. How do you get farmers, once they've measured these, how do you encourage them or work with them to actually improve on those outcomes? You might hear some of that later from Shannon in her presentation. And then also, you know, long-term engagement of supply chain partnerships, which I'll touch on, evaluating outcomes over time, and then independent verification of improvement. I'm not going to talk much about those. I do actually have a poster in a different session that'll be downstairs this afternoon if you want to come by after the business meeting and talk more about those. I can talk about that. But really on the metrics. So the metrics are all designed. And I'm not going to go through all our principles here, but when you have that diverse kind of membership, they do, you know, did need to come up with a set of principles for how are we going to operate together, how are we going to work together, what are the common things that we can all agree on, and one is that what we care about in terms of environmental sustainability are the outcomes. We want to look at the environmental impacts, the environmental results that are important for ensuring sustainability at a scale relevant to a farm operation and responsive to changes in farm management. At its core, we use a field scale tool, and so it needs to be able to be used by a farmer and provide some guidance back in some in ways in which they can affect the metric outcome by their actions. And then the harder parts of this get to be where the scientific understanding supports confidence in modeled results, and where the tools balance robustness and simplicity for broad usability. We're asking, farmers aren't necessarily using this by themselves, but they might be using it with a crop advisor, still, you know, not used in a research context, not being used by academics, but by practitioners in the field. The current metrics we have here on the right, I'm going to talk about those just a little bit more, in four different categories. So I've binned them in different categories for thinking about what are the models that we use and what are the models that we need in order to do a better job. And so we range from simple algorithms. Our land use metric is the inverse of crop yield. That's a pretty well-known number. You've got pretty high confidence that a farmer for a field knows that number, pretty highly confident in that one. Ranging to more complex algorithms, you're not doing modeling, you're just doing accounting, essentially. And then we use several different index models, which are, these are specifically tools developed by NRCS. They give you a quantitative number, but it's really a directional indicator based on practices. It's not modeling specific things at the field level, but it is they are very useful in providing guidance directly back to farmers. So that's why they're primarily used. NRCS implements these a lot. They're valuable in that context. We also are looking at process models. So right now we're using Russell 2 for soil erosion, so our soil conservation metric, and that's the closest we get at this point to a model that's actually simulating a biophysical process of some kind inside. And so one of the challenges with our metrics development is that we're actually trying to meet two needs simultaneously. We're trying to both provide feedback to farmers to highlight what their opportunities are, what are things they could do to improve. And then the second one is supply chain reporting for achieving and verifying sustainable sourcing objectives. I'll skip through this quickly. The calculator itself is an online interface. It's free online. People can go use it and enter their data, and they get a field print score that shows where they stand relative to national and state benchmarks on the various metrics that we have. I'm going to let Shannon talk more about that. I'm going to talk instead about how it's actually reused in the field in terms of a supply chain context. So individuals can and do go use the online tool, and that's great, but really how it's primarily implemented is in the field is through a supply chain project. So this is just as a case study example. One of our members is Unilever. They have a commitment, corporate commitment, to sustainably sourcing 10 of their major commodities by 2020. Mapping of their Hellmann's brand, they discovered that 100% of the soybean oil going into that product comes from one Archer Daniels Midland crush facility in Iowa. So they started working with ADM, and they brought in WWF, and they have a number of local partners, including Iowa State Department of Agriculture, Practical Farmers of Iowa, other local groups on a soybean oil sourcing project. So on the right, it's just the table is just showing how many acres they've been engaging. So they're up to close to 500,000 acres in 2015 data collection year. And they're focusing in particular in that area on improving water quality and soil health in the region. And so the way this works is not, I'm not going out and talking to the farmers in Iowa, and neither is Unilever. They're working with ADM field staff, and they're working with those local partners who have field staff to talk with the farmers through the people they already know. So we're reaching back down through the supply chain to engage the farmers directly that way, getting them to enter their information and then reporting back out on them. And so they actually have a plan in terms of how they want to do this catalyzing of continuous improvement, which is in their focusing on water quality and soil health. One of the practices in this region that they're trying to help farmers adopt is cover crops. So they have a whole cover crop cost-sharing program that farmers can enroll in. And so this is an example of kind of education back. So this is a soil erosion metric just binned by the percent of fields in that project in each of these scores. So you can see tons of soil erosion, and just the black, I believe, is T tolerable for this area. But the idea being that what happens is at the end of the data entry season, Unilever and ADM, they'll go back out and have grower meetings and show them this type of information. So a grower will know their own score. They'll know whether they're at 3.6 or 7.7. They know theirs, and they can see here where they fit in relation to their neighbors. This is their community directly. And that has some of the power in terms of helping to start a conversation. If you see that you're, at 9.8 there, you might, next time you talk to your advisor who's also seen this data, say, hey, what can I do? Is there something I can do? We know that erosion's a bad thing. What can we do to reduce that? So that's just a general idea of how that part of the program works. So my role at Field to Market is the science and research director, and so trying to work to improve on those metrics that we have. I mean, I showed where they fit now. That doesn't mean that we've decided that's the best available tool that will ever be implemented for that topic. That means that's where we started. It means we recognize that outcome is really important for sustainable agriculture. We need to start measuring it and talking about it in the field. But we do want to continue to improve on those metrics and build metrics that are most suited to the purpose and most grounded in the science. The index models that I showed that we have three of right now on soil carbon, water quality, and biodiversity, they're really well suited to providing guidance to farmers on their opportunities for improvement, but they're not quantitative. So they meet that initial objective of working with the farmers, but they're not really something you can work on in a supply chain context in terms of if Unilever or other companies are interested in looking at their overall soil carbon impact, for example. We don't currently provide them with a metric that can do that. There are tools out there that do that, but are they implementable in this kind of program? That's a big question for us at this point. There are, you know, so process models that are out there are designed to reflect the best understanding of the science, right? But if there's still uncertainty in key elements of the science, that means there is just inherently uncertainty in the models. And so that's something we just need to understand. If we're going to go to bring these models into our program, what do we know about the uncertainty? What is the real guidance that we can provide based on those? So as I mentioned, we're following NRCS with regards to the soil erosion models we use. We have sort of ongoing conversations going on both in water quality and soil carbon, where there are widely used process-based models in the research context, but how can we think about using those in our context? The considerations then is how well understood is the underlying science. I've been having a lot of conversations about water quality in particular. That's a key sustainability concern in a lot of the U.S. when you took commodity crops. You have to consider water quality. The models exist to look at water quality modeling. But when the more I talk to the scientists, the more I understand that even some of the science underlying those models, they're discovering things that are contrary to what they thought was the best understanding. And so that's still a very evolving area of science, which is great. But that has implications for, okay, what is the best thing that we can do to actually provide useful guidance to farmers in the field about what they could do if we want to be able to do something meaningful. So calibration becomes a big issue with process models as well. As you know, you have to calibrate them well to a specific area and then use them in a research context, and that works really well. We're talking about basically the entire lower 48 that we want to be able to touch with the metrics we're using, and so how can we make them available in that context? So this acceptable trade-off between accuracy and friendliness, and then confidence in the directional correctness. So this is where I have my conversations with modelers as well, is I know you can't give me necessarily the exact nitrate concentration in that runoff, but can you give me a directionally correct number that if a farmer implements ABCDE practices, their number will go up or down? Is that something that even directionally we can provide the right guidance that way with the models? And that's still an open question in some considerations. One example of what we've recently done is with a greenhouse gas emissions metric includes emissions from energy use on farm, which is essentially just accounting up fuel and CO2 equivalents, but it also includes nitrous oxide emissions from soil. The current initial metric adopted in 2009 just assumed a simple 1.4 modifier on nitrogen applications, which we know is not correct, and also doesn't necessarily give farmers incentives for improving or doing additional practices in their nitrogen management. We are in the process of adopting and considering a new approach, applying a hybrid sort of meta-model methodology. So not trying to adopt in DASENT or DNDC or one of the process models directly, but using a meta-analysis of what's known about best nitrogen management practices, doing some additional simulation modeling for a range of areas, and then getting together a panel of scientists to provide with their expert judgment what are the appropriate modifiers based on these suites of practices. And this is work we've done primarily, I should say, Cliff Snyder has done for IP&I and his colleagues. He's really led this process and bringing forward to us an improved modifier for nitrous oxide. So it's something that would be responsive to changes in farm management. We believe it would be directionally correct. It incentivizes practice adoption. There's still some disadvantages to the approach. It may not capture all relevant conditions. It may not match measurement values if you happen to, you know, have a flux tower on that field. But overall, it helps to meet our needs. So moving forward, you know, this is the kind of thing that we're considering pretty actively with soil carbon and water quality. What are the next steps that we can take in those in terms of what the models that are available and the approaches that are appropriate, keeping in mind our core principles. We do have a process in place, so each metric is evaluated at least once every 3 years. It may not be changed, but it is at least evaluated in case there are changes that need to be made. We, you know, have active membership from our university members as well as conservation organizations, and we have an independent science advisory council that was just started this year. So we're doing what we can to try and bring in the best scientific guidance and scientific knowledge into the process. So I'll stop there. You mean collecting more data from the field level? So that sort of hits on a topic that I've considered a lot, which is that if our goal is to reach 50 million acres, that's a lot of data of what's actually happening in the field that could potentially be really valuable in a model development context. And so the challenge, I guess, with doing that on a large scale is the data privacy. The data are owned by the individual farmer or the landowner, or I can only share them anonymously in an aggregate, right? So they have to opt in to let anybody else see it. So you would need, farmers who are very interested in doing that kind of development. I think that's an interesting idea. It's not something we've looked at too much, but certainly our extension members are, out in the field all the time. There are a lot of programs through extension, like Discovery Farms and others, that actually work with farmers to do research essentially on their fields and feed that into development.